Today, I'm bringing back a guest who has been on. He was on, gosh, 2.5 years ago. I can't believe it. The first couple of months that I had the podcast. And so back in the beginning of the pandemic. And so it's been a while. I didn't want you to have to go digging for an old episode. And the reason I'm bringing this back and republishing it is because I'm going to have Nick back on the podcast next week. I saw him last week at a retreat. We had the same coach, and he and I were finalists in a contest. So the finalists of this contest got a special retreat with my coach in Sedona, and it was amazing. So I caught up with Nick, and I asked him because I knew, because we're, you know, in a Facebook group together. And I knew that he had just released a brand new documentary he had created, worked on for 7 years, called Invisible, the film. And it's about fibromyalgia. And so I thought it was something that you, my audience, would benefit from hearing about. And I'm also, I want to dig into it with him. Because that's a fascinating subject. And I had an autoimmune disease back when I was in my late 20s. I didn't have fibromyalgia. I had chronic fatigue syndrome. So I can really relate to the struggle and how you really do feel invisible. Because, you know, before I was diagnosed, doctors didn't even believe that there was anything wrong with me. They thought it was all in my head. And it was so very frustrating. So anyways, I'm very excited to reintroduce you to Nick, let you have a breathwork exercise he did in this episode to calm you, and then stay tuned for the updated episode and catch up with Nick and what's going on and hear about his documentary. So with no further ado, let's get to the episode from May 2020.
Hi, I'm Lori Wright, also known as Not Your Average Grandma. I created this podcast as a place for women in their second half of life to go to receive inspiration. If you are at a place where you believe your best days are behind you, it is my hope one of these episodes will spark you to think differently and lead you to a new belief that your second half may actually be your best half. I want you to stop seeing your age as a limitation and start seeing it as your superpower. You have years of experience and value that the younger you never had. So it's time to lean into that and use it to fuel your future. No more letting age or circumstances hold you back from the pursuit of a more fulfilling and fun life. The happier we are, the better the world will be. So instead of settling for what you don't want, how about going after what you do want? Listen in and let something you hear prompt you to take the first step in making the rest your best.
Today marks a big milestone, and that is because we have our first male guest. And I've wanted to interview Nick Demos for a long time, so I just recently reached out and asked him to be on the podcast because I think he can really help people with his breathing expertise. He is an expert in pranayama, which is a breathing practice for yoga, and he's been teaching yoga for over a decade. And I just love going through the exercise that we did on this episode. It really calmed me, and I wanted to share that with my listeners because I heard him do it on another podcast and I was like, that would be so valuable, especially in this time that we're dealing with the coronavirus. So come to find out, Nick is older than I thought he was and he has a midlife transformation to share. So I really thought, wow, it's kind of a double whammy episode because you get to learn breathing and you get to hear about Nick's transformation, which happened when he was 39. He just had his birthday the day before our interview. So I was really shocked to hear he was turning 49 because he's so exuberant and he comes across, his soul is just beautiful. And I couldn't be happier than to have him as my first male guest. So let's get on with the interview. If you are driving, by the way, please do not close your eyes during the breathing exercise, but do redo it. Go ahead and do it with us with your eyes open, but go back and do it with them closed because I think closing your eyes and getting into that headspace is just so calming and particularly useful if you're feeling anxious right now. So let me introduce you to Nick Demos. If you are tuning in to this one, I think you are a lucky person because I have my friend, fellow business entrepreneur, the Nick Demos. And Nick, that's what he goes by. That's his website. But I love Nick because he is just, and I'm going to use your word, Nick, shiny. And from the second I met him, I was attracted to him. I loved him. He had this exuberance. I guess we connect like that because I think I'm exuberant too. So our exuberance just kind of bounces off the walls. So I wanted him to come here because he is very knowledgeable and he's going to share a lot about what he's knowledgeable about. And he has midlife transformation to share. And I thought he was 10 years younger. We were talking before we started, and I thought he was younger. So he's just a perfect fit. But he is my first guy on my podcast. So welcome to the show, Nick.
Well, first of all, I am so honored to be your first guy. Like, that's super duper cool to be the first man to grace this podcast. I feel very fortunate and very, very lucky. And thank you for that shiny. You are so shiny. You really are. You have this effervescence that just radiates from you. And I think it's really what draws people to you. So it takes one to know one. Let's put it that way.
Yes. Yes. Well, you know, I think when somebody is shiny, it's people want some of that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where it came from, but I think it was a gift I got from my mother because she was always a really positive person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she was one of those people that when you like had a bad day, she was like, well, let's just make some lemonade out of those lemons. You know, she would wake me up every morning and turn my light on and say, "Rise and shine."
My mother used to sing to me every morning the same idea. And I think, you know, there is something to that decision to be positive. Right? Like, it's actually a decision to make the choice that I am going to look at life from this side of the cup, right?
Yeah.
And by doing so, you actually are raising your vibration on a daily basis. And of course, that's going to attract people to you because who wants to be around negativity, right? Nobody wants to be around people that are, well, unless you are like that. You don't want it to be like attracts like. You don't want to be around somebody who is negative and complaining and it because it brings your vibrational level down, right? So I think I err on your mom and your side and my mom's side of I'd rather be the rose-colored glasses person. And, you know, sometimes that maybe even gets me hurt. You know what I'm saying? Because yeah. You can almost be naive sometimes, but I've always said, even after living in New York City for 25 years, which is a rough and tough tumble, and in the entertainment business at that, I have always said I would rather err on that side. And if I sometimes get that little hurt, or if somebody, you know, digs at me and I don't really know how to handle it, it's okay. I'd rather still keep that positive energy floating in the world.
Right, right. Yeah, I think some people are more aware than others. And so when you have that awareness of when you're with somebody and what they're kind of bringing energy wise, but some people just, they don't know. And so that's one thing that I think really helps is when you start to like really pay attention to how you're feeling and pay attention to, okay, who was around you that was making you feel that way?
I mean, awareness is everything. That is like the key to life. It's that's what brings you to presence, right? Is that awareness of your thoughts, feelings, and emotions. And the one thing that you can do to change your life is to begin to notice those emotions and those feelings and control them. And by control, I don't mean that you're going to manipulate. I mean that you are going to become aware of them so you can make a different choice. So you can change. That's that whole change your thought, change your life thing.
Yes.
Right? When you're able to control your emotions, your reactions. Life isn't what happens to you. It's your reaction to it. So when you can control that reaction, that emotional response, which then you're able to then control the thought, and that new thought changes the vibration.
Yes, so much so. Like, tell people why you're so knowledgeable about all this stuff. So where does this come from? I love your background and you've done so many different things.
Yeah, so I'm ultimately a storyteller. I tell stories and I help other people connect to their intuition and their creativity so that they can tell their personal brand stories. I work with a lot of business entrepreneurs like you do.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people think, and I used to think this until I knew better, but I'm just not creative.
Oh, yeah. Okay. We can totally get into that because you are born creative, right? Let me stop you right there.
That's so true. Yes.
I want you to think of the word creative. The word creative is a derivative of creation. Creation is the spark of life. So by merely existing, you are creative. You are creation. And creativity is an unlearning. It's actually not a learning. You don't learn to be creative. You unlearn what you've been told about yourself. When you are born, when you come into this world, you have this infinite capacity for creativity. And as a child, if you wonder if you're creative or not, go look at it, go watch a child play, right? They don't think about anything. They just do it. They just play. You give a child pots and pans, and we think of them now as, oh, well, we put them on the stove and we cook with them in a very specific way. You give it to kids and they start banging them together and they're having a whole musical, and you know, they're creating an orchestra, right? Because they think outside of the box at all times, which we all do. But what happens is as we're maturing, as we're growing, we are told things about ourselves. And when we're told these things, they create these blocks, right? These emotional, mental, and spiritual blocks in front of us that we then determine that we're not creative because we were told to color inside the lines. We were told to do all of these things for the structure of society. So when, as an adult, if you want to return to your creativity, it's about removing those obstacles and blocks that are in your way.
And I think one thing that was my problem was that I just had my life so busy, busy, busy. So I filled it up with too much stuff.
Yeah.
Workaholism and working for the man, you know, and it just, I never had time to be creative or think creatively.
We were at an event. I don't know if you remember this. We were at an event and you said to me, oh, I love what you do, but I'm just not creative.
I did say that to you?
Uh-huh. And I remember this because I said to you, wait, being a business person is the most creative thing you can possibly do because on a daily basis, you are being innovative, right? On a daily basis, particularly those in the online space, if you're an entrepreneur of any kind, you're writing an email, you are hosting a podcast, you are, you know, having an interview, you are going on a Facebook Live. The amount of creative output is actually phenomenal. I have spent my entire career in the creative industries and the creative arts, and I have to say that this business is the most creative of all of them I've ever had because it stretches you in so many huge ways.
Yeah, and it's so funny that I said that to you because that it's clearly such a tape that's been played in my head
totally.
For so many years because I really think that I've gotten a lot of creativeness out of myself. So I don't really believe that anymore, but it's still playing.
Yeah, well, we have those old tapes, right? And it's interesting because I think it's a wiring, right? Like you've got these wires and I think of it as like the cross wires. And currently they're on this path and they keep going to the same spot, right? And over time we have to remind ourselves that they can move in different directions. I'm using my fingers to show.
Yeah. And I'm nodding my head.
Yeah, no. but they can go in different directions and you just have to continue to repattern your brain so that it changes course and direction. And awareness, coming back to that, is the way in which to do so. Just by bringing awareness to it, you don't have to really change anything. You just have to notice. And the minute you notice, it automatically begins to change.
Yep. So you have done all kinds of stuff. And so talk a little bit about your background, because I think it's important for people to know where you came from, like how you started, and then how you got into the spiritual stuff because you haven't been doing that as long.
Okay.
10 years, I guess.
Yeah, a little over like 12 years. But okay. So I started my career as a dancer.
Oh, I love So You Think You Can Dance is like one of my favorite shows. I think I told you that.
Yeah, you did.
I love that show. They're just so gifted.
Yes.
Dancers are so gifted.
Well, it's discipline. No, I think one of the things that I most learned was how to really structure my day, you know, which has obviously helped me throughout through the years, is because you were at the ballet bar every morning, right? And you were there, rain, shine, no matter how you felt, it didn't matter, you were there. So I was a professional dancer, starting when I was 16, my first job. And by 19, I was on the road.
Wow, you must have been really good.
I was fortunate. I was fortunate because it was at a time where there wasn't as much competition, right? There weren't as many male dancers at that time. It was not the time to be a male dancer in the 80s.
Yeah. So who was your role model?
I really like Mikhail Baryshnikov, probably.
Mm, yeah.
You know, even though I wasn't a ballet dancer, that still was sort of that, oh, I want to be Misha. You know, I wanted to be a Misha. So by my 19, I was on a national tour and moved to New York right thereafter of a musical. And really began a musical theater career.
Oklahoma? Is that where
you're from? No, not from Oklahoma, but we get there.
I'm
from Michigan originally.
Michigan, okay.
From a small town in Michigan, Traverse City, Michigan. So by 26, I was doing the Radio City Music Hall Spectacular with the Rockettes, dancing with the Rockettes. And I had this moment. I was in a bear costume, by the way, doing Russian jumps in a bear costume. They did this Nutcracker thing.
Oh, wow.
I'm dancing on the, and it's a big, huge stage, as you know, and there's numbers and it's a grid and it's this whole thing. And I'm looking for my number and I can't see because my bear head costume has fallen down on my face, and it's Christmas time and it's my fifth show of the day, because you do five or six shows a day there. And I started crying. Tears were rolling down my cheeks underneath a bear head in this Christmas show. And I had this moment. I remember taking off the bear head and I looked in the mirror and I said to myself, this is not your life. You gotta change your life. I felt very out of control. I felt creatively stifled. Speaking of creativity, it just didn't feel right for me. Now, here I am at the height of a dance career at 26 years old. I'm still fairly young, right, in that world. And I just decided I was done. And I got on the phone that, like, 2 days later and started calling every place I ever worked. And I said, I'm directing and choreographing now. Just because I felt like I could. I was 26 and I was going to do it, right?
Good for you.
And one of the theaters said, oh my goodness, we just lost our choreographer.
Ooh.
And a month later, I began my choreography career. And with one year, I had fully transitioned. 3 years later, I'm at one of the theaters that I had directed at. And they fired the producer of the theater, the board of directors. And the board president turned to me, and this was in Oklahoma City, this is the Oklahoma connection, turned to me and said, will you run the theater for a year while we do a search? I'm 28 years old. I don't know what I'm doing, right? I said, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm going to learn, right? On the job learning. I mean, that's like grad school for free, to be paid to do it. So that's really where I learned business. And at the end of that year, they said to me, we don't want you to go. We want you to stay. We had the most successful year we've had in over a decade, which led to me being there for 9 more years.
Wow.
Now, and really successfully growing the theater. For instance, when I started there were about 6 people on staff and we ended up with 45. So it really grew into a multi-million dollar company by the time I left. And then I was practicing yoga in Oklahoma City. And at that time in Oklahoma City, this was, you know, many years ago, there were only 2 yoga classes a day in the entire city. One in the morning at 9 a.m. and one at 5 o'clock at night. And I worked. So I couldn't go to either. It was like the Real Housewives of Oklahoma. And so I...
So was that just something that you started to gain an interest in?
Or? You know what? I think what it was, it, because of my dance background, I needed something physical to do every single day. And it has sort of a dance quality to it, yoga, right? The asana part anyway. And I was always a spiritual seeker. I was always looking for the truth in art. The truth in myself, so I could be a better artist, a better creator, a better person in the world. And they kind of converged together. And I couldn't find really training there. So I took a month off of my job and I went back to New York and I did a teacher training program. And I'm in the teacher training program and I'm sitting in a meditation and it came to me, you didn't need to take a month off. You need to quit your job. Whoa. Right. So I went back to Oklahoma and I spent another year there before I did it. Right. I wasn't quite ready to like pull. I knew I needed to, but I wasn't really ready to pull the trigger. And so I did. And in that last year, I also created a production company, a producing company for Broadway, and began producing. At my final year, I was producing a show in the West End in London, as well as running the theater in Oklahoma, traveling to New York. It was a big, crazy year. And then the very next year, I produced a show on Broadway called Memphis, and it won the Tony in 2010. So a year after leaving my job, a year and a half after leaving the job, won the Tony.
That's so exciting. Yeah.
That was really the breaking point, though, for me. That was really the turning point. When you ask about what's the turning point, it really was that moment. And not in
now,
the
way. I have a question.
Yeah.
So it's like you had your best year the year you had made the decision to leave. Mm-hmm. Now, what do you think that message from the universe was sending you? To me, I would feel like, well, maybe I should stay, or maybe it's like you're just going off with a bang and there's better things to come. And
I think I was so focused on the future at that point that I wasn't even fully present, right? Like it wasn't, oh, should I, shouldn't I not? I already made the decision, I'm going. And so I was looking ahead and more than looking at what was happening in the moment. Now, the scary thing was, this was 2008. I left my job in October and the crash happened in November.
Wow, yeah, funny how that happens.
And so there I went from having a salary and benefits and all of those great things to be an independent person, not knowing how I was going to make my next paycheck. So that was a real like scary moment. But then fortunately, like I said, the show won the Tony.
And it's funny because I think what I'm sensing there is that when we make the decision of the path we want to go, if it's the right one, we get rewarded.
Yes.
And the downturn, as you say,
yeah,
is just another test of, is this really what you want?
100%. I sat there when it happened. I remember thinking, oh, this is a huge test. Mm-hmm. I remember saying that to myself and saying, forge ahead, forge ahead, forge ahead, and it all will be okay. Because here's the thing, everyone was going through it on some level. People were being laid off. People were, you know, I think because of my background of all the years of not having a steady job, it was only those 9 years that I'd ever had steady income, I was prepared for that. I knew how to do it. I'd been doing it since I was 16 years old, right? Like I'd been working in a way that you don't have a steady life. So I was ready.
Yeah. And I think this is a good message for people that are going through the same thing. Cause here we are faced.
Here we are again.
Yes.
And it's cyclical.
Yeah.
Oh. Jinx.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. All right. So we get to the Tony and then you.
And here's the thing. The Tony happened. And as it's happening, there's this great CBS still of the moment that it was announced. And my face is not of jubilation. It is not of excitement. It is not of happiness. You see people around me are also happy and they're clapping and my face is dead. And I remember the moment. It's so strange that it got captured because I remember this moment so specifically. My first thought was, oh, I'm so relieved because we needed the Tony in order for the show to stay open. And my relief was, oh, all of my investors are going to get paid back. They're gonna make their money. And then my second thought was, this is it. This is it. This is how this happens. This is what's happening. Because I had spent my entire life dreaming of this moment, right? You work, this is the pinnacle of success in this industry. And here it was happening. I was 39 years old. I was like, now what? What am I going to do with the rest of my life? I thought this was something that you went for and you got, and then everything was going to be rah, 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 different, right? Now what? What do I do now? And this is all happening in my head as I'm walking up onto the stage.
That's so funny because we as watchers on those awards shows, we have no idea. It's just like the behind the scenes.
Right.
And you say now the investors are going to get paid. Well, you think anything that's up there ready to win an award is Megan Money.
Nope.
That's interesting. I got chills when you were describing what you were going through in that moment. So I just had to share that.
And so that, and then that's really when the real more deep spiritual work happened for me, was after that. When we talk about really connecting with myself and with a higher self, that's when it began. And I knew that I had a choice to make, that either I could go on and continue with what I was doing and chase after the next Tony Award or the next whatever, or I needed to open myself further, dig in a little deeper and say, what do you want to do with the rest of your life, right? What do you want to do? You did what you set out to do. So now what would really light your fire? And it became this thought of, well, okay, yes, that musical served the world in a certain way, right? Yes, it brought joy to people, but how can I serve the world greater? What can I do? What's my legacy, right? Here I am at 39 years old going, what's my legacy? And so that's really when I dug in. And then I began to explore my creative self and the spiritual practices. And I really dug in. I went and lived with a teacher for a while, a spiritual teacher who helped me create a morning practice, a daily ritual.
And where was this?
Well,
it was. I think of Eat, Pray, Love.
It was a little like that because it was in Guatemala.
Okay.
And I really just dug in and spent some time in self-discovery as well as artistic discovery. I decided that I wanted to direct a film. And so I directed a short film, and then that led to being hired to direct two documentaries. And then I began writing a book, and then I'm teaching. And I was teaching a lot of yoga, meditation, and creativity to various people. And I'm in a yoga teacher training, and a woman says to me, have you ever thought about writing a book? And I said, yeah, you know what? Someday I'm going to write a book. And she's the room's very quiet, and she's writing, and she puts her head back up and she says, well, I'm a book agent. We have to talk. And so that led me into that direction. So it's been this sort of discovery, which then led me to the online space of teaching online and coaching. And that's really where I'm at now, is serving entrepreneurs in particular about storytelling, how to tell a story, how to craft their stories that are best for their brand, as well as connect with themselves on a deep level, whether that's through meditation practices and breath work. I'm a bit of a breath work expert, I guess. That's really what I'm known for in the more spiritual circles, and really helping them connect, like I said, to their intuition and their creativity.
Yeah. And that's one thing that we can talk about. That's one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on in the first place, was to talk about breath work and what it can do for you. And I had no idea until I read this book called Super Life, and it talks about the five things that you need to have most healthiest life. And believe it or not, one of them was oxygen.
Yeah.
Water, H2O was the other. You know, it was just so fascinating to me about how important deep breathing is to the human body.
When you think about it, we can go for periods of time, long periods of time, without clearly seeing other people, which a lot of us are experiencing right now, right? If you're single and alone and living at home and you're not actually experiencing the company of others, we can go quite some time without food, actually. We can even go without water. But the one thing you must have in order to survive is breath in the body. It's that vital, which is interesting to think about, because the minute it's out of your body, you're gone. Right? That's the only thing. We're that dependent on it. It's that important to us.
We take it for granted, right?
And we take it for granted, right? Because it happens automatically, right? So we just take it for granted. Now we get about 21,600 breaths per day on average. And it's been measured, believe it or not, they've done a study, and it's about 21,600 on average per person per day. And when people are in scarcity mode, I always say, look at the abundance of your breath in your life. You want to know if the universe is naturally abundant? Take a look at your breath. Look at that. And you don't even think about it. And the ancient yogis believed that, the yogis of yore believed that if you took fewer breaths, you would live longer. So they did these practices of restraining the breath, of holding the breath, so you could begin to control or manipulate your breathing patterns. Now, if you think about it, what they were intuiting is that the thing that causes most illness is stress, right? How do we reduce stress by things like what? By breathing, by meditation, by reducing your anxiety level, by bringing down, you know, bringing down your blood pressure. All of these things actually happen when you practice breathing practices. So they were actually intuiting what really actually does work that science has now caught up with. It's really interesting because breathwork has really only had studies in the last 10 years. And yet it's been these practices that have been, I mean, we're talking 5,000-year-old practices that have been passed down for generation upon generation upon generation. But, you know, for those of us that have been doing it for, you know, I'm on going on 15, 20 years of practice, we're so excited because now the science is saying what we already knew, right? What we already felt and sensed within us. And so by manipulating the breath, by controlling it, what happens is you begin to be able to control your nervous system. And when you can control your nervous system, that's when you can control your reactions to what happens to you. And when you can control those reactions, that's when you can control your reactions to stress, to all the environmental,
impacts
control,
or
thank yeah, you the, yeah, yeah impact the impact from not only from family, friends, stress at work, but also environmental impact, right? You can control you can control that by your reaction to it. So
one thing he said in the book, which I thought was very interesting, is that one reason, and of course, probably his theory, I'm not sure if there was any like factual scientific data behind it, but one reason people who smoke have a harder time quitting is because they're deep inhaling. They're doing that deep inhaling practice, but they're just like filling their lungs with the wrong thing.
So I'm smiling because I used to be a smoker. Like in my 20s, a dancer.
Me right? too.
You know, we all used to smoke. We used to smoke. Now, and what I realized is that what I didn't actually need, because I wasn't, the nicotine went out pretty quick and I wasn't actually addicted to that, but I was addicted to the habit of taking a deep breath.
Uh-huh.
Because it actually, you know, brings more oxygen to your brain, as you were saying. It purifies the blood. There are so many medical benefits to it, but also I realized I just wanted to like take a break and take a breath.
Exactly. And the people who smoke still, like I used to sit in an office and smoke when I was in my 20s. Isn't that horrible?
Okay,
and I had an office mate and she didn't smoke. I look back and I think, oh, the poor thing had an ashtray sitting next to my computer. Oh my God, it's horrible. And but I never was a huge smoker, I say. I was like half, well, still 10 cigarettes a day is not good. But like people today, they go outside. And the people who don't smoke never take breaks, and the people that do smoke do.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting how the things around smoking are really the hook, I think.
They are. It really is that intake of air. It's allowing the brain to be oxygenated, and it's allowing you to take a pause, right? A breath has an inhale, pause, exhale, and a pause. And it's in that pause, in that exploration, that you can begin to know yourself, right? And so that's what really why we practice. It's oftentimes used as a precursor to meditation, that you sit and you do these breath practices, even if it's just inhaling in for three counts and exhaling for three counts, because you begin to regulate that nervous system and calm yourself. It's a beautiful calming mechanism to then be able to sit deeper into a meditation and have the insight that you are looking for.
Do we want to do that now and have the listeners follow us?
Absolutely.
Wouldn't that be so cool? Yeah. I did my meditation. I told you earlier, I did that. I do 10 minutes every morning. I'm pretty good at it. I'm pretty consistent. So, and then when I skip it, like I got interrupted yesterday by my puppy. So I probably got like 2 minutes and then I had to, my day wasn't as good, you know, from a vibrancy.
Yeah. Well, because you set when you do these practices, you set yourself up for success. You set yourself up to be in a vibrational state that when you walk out the door, you're able to handle more of what's coming to you, coming at you. Again, you can change your reaction in that way. Talking about, you know, being positive, this is a tool to help you maintain that positivity, to maintain that level and that space and that vibration that you want to be in.
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay. So we're actually going to practice what I call the powerful threes. We'll inhale for three counts. We're going to pause for three counts and we're going to exhale for three counts. Okay. So sit up nice and tall, elongating your spine. Allow your seat to anchor into the earth, with the crown of your head to reach towards the ceiling. And just begin by bringing awareness to where the breath currently is. Perhaps noticing the sensation of the breath as it enters through the nostrils and comes down the throat into the lungs, and the sensation and the feeling of the air as it reverses course and exhales out the body. You may notice the breath more on your upper lip, the air flowing there, perhaps in the nostrils, or maybe you notice the rise and the fall of the chest. So with this practice, we are going to breathe in and out through our nostrils only, keeping the mouth closed. So to begin, however, we are going to open the mouth. So inhale deep and full, fill the lungs. Open the mouth and exhale a sigh out. Then close the mouth and begin inhaling 1, 2, 3. Now pause and hold the breath. 1, 2, 3. Now slowly exhale, soften the ribs. 3, soften the navel. 2, let go. 1. Going again, inhale. 1, extend the belly. 2, rib cage. 3, pause and hold. 2, 3. Now slowly exhale, soften. 3, let go. 2, let go. 1. Breathing in again, inhale, expand. 1, expand. 2, and 3, pause and hold. Now exhale, soften. 3, 2, 1. Release the breath, re-lengthen the spine, and draw the attention, the focus between your eyebrows. And just sit with your eyes still closed in observation. You may notice some sensations or feelings or thoughts that come through. And this is the awareness practice. Just notice them and try not to judge them. Just allow them to be what they are. Let them pass on through. And if the mind is wandering off, just gently draw it back to between the eyebrows. And then when you're ready, yet taking all the time that you need, open your eyes and come back into the space.
That was great. Now, if people are listening while they're driving, they don't want to close their eyes. Is it something they can still do with their eyes
open? Yeah, absolutely. You can absolutely do it with your eyes open. And that was one round. Typically, you would do that 3 times and then meditate after.
I like this way much better than the Tony Robbins way. Do you know his way? It's like really intense, as you can imagine.
His is for a different purpose, right? Like he's really, his is more pumping you up. It's a transformational. And there are some breath practices like that, that I have a wheelhouse of practices, depending on what your goal is. Because we were talking about what your intention is, why, right? We always want to ask the why behind something. Now, if we are wanting to sit and meditate, we want to do a calming meditation. If we're wanting, like if I work with a client and I'm wanting them to get them moving, I'm wanting to get them shaking up their life a bit, if they're too sedentary, then I would give a very different type of breath work.
Interesting.
It's a science.
I love that.
It's actually a science. The science of pranayama. It's called pranayama, the science of pranayama. And it is years of study, honestly. And practice, because it is not something that you can just read, right? You have to know it in your body. So you have to practice all the different versions to understand what energetically is shifting or happening.
So the one we did, I'm assuming was calming, because I felt
it was
very
calm. Yes, it's a calming breath practice.
Is that good for people to do when they're feeling tense?
Yes, if you're feeling tense, if you're feeling like scattered, because it also brings some focus and clarity. If you're feeling anxiety or stress, it's great for that.
Okay, good. Awesome. I think that will help people. So I appreciate that. Thank you for doing that.
Oh, you're welcome.
So was there anything else you wanted to cover in terms of your transformation? Looking back, I have a question for you.
Oh yeah, sure.
So when we were at our last retreat in August, I think it was the August retreat, there was a meditation we did, and it was about when you meet your older self. And I'm not sure if it was as powerful for you as it was for me, but I went through seeing in this meditation a very wrinkled, very old version of myself over 100 years, because I believe that I will live, and I think we all have the capacity to live that long and still have my mental faculties about me. But when I came to her, I apologized to her. So my current self apologizing and seeing, and said that I was sorry that I had waited so long to find my purpose, that it took me so long. And she said, that is okay. It wasn't meant to happen sooner, because you had to go through all of the things that you did in order to really help people. And it like left me in tears. You know, it's just like a really powerful meditation. And so when I was thinking about us talking, I thought, I want to ask Nick what the old 100-year version of Nick would say to the current version of Nick. And so I don't know if you went through that meditation or not.
You know, it's interesting, because I actually feel like I've had multiple purposes.
I hear that from people, yeah.
You know, I feel like, yes, that I had this purpose to entertain when I was in my 20s. I had this purpose to build this theater for this community in Oklahoma in my 30s. Now in my 40s and almost 50, it was...
Oh, by the way, happy birthday!
Thank you!
Yes, yesterday was Nick's birthday.
49. And, I think that it has been about being of service in a different way. And who knows what the next generation, the next decades, thank you, will bring for me. So, you know,
well, I think your purpose is, maybe your passion has changed over the years, but I think your purpose has always been to be shiny, to bring shininess to people, to you're serving in so many different ways. The gifts
you have. I think my purpose, and this is what Dharma, you know, when they talk about Dharma, is to be the most full vibration of myself so that I can affect others. That's really the purpose. That's really why we're here, right? Is to step so fully and deeply into who we really truly are that we can affect others in the same way. Because that's all it's really about, right? Is really fully expressing your creation, your creativity. Yeah.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
I think one of the reasons that you thought I was younger is because of the practices. When you practice these practices every single day, you lighten up. You literally are lightening yourself up. You are lightening your spirit, your mind, and even your body. It has all these beautiful effects, and so consequently you're keeping your body in beautiful shape, and you're keeping your mind and your spirit in a beautiful alignment.
Right. Yes. And speaking of feeling younger and looking younger, so you used to be a dancer.
Yes.
Yoga, I know, keeps you strong and is a physically sometimes challenging some of the stuff that yoga practices. So as a dancer, do you ever dance? What do you do other than yoga?
Daily.
Do you dance daily?
I don't go to class anymore, obviously, but there I have some kind of dance every single day, you know, that I do. I'm a big gym guy. I'm at the gym. You know, I need, and boy, you know, at this time, not being able to go to the gym has been rough for me. I'm not going to lie. I did push-ups this morning. You know, I'm still doing something physical every single day, and I'm trying to walk. I'm not a big runner, but I miss that physical activity, and I go 5 days a week. I really do, because it's for me, I think because of those years of that discipline of the physical activity, my body craves it. And I'm one of those freaks who loves going to the gym, you know?
Yeah. I like physical activity too.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering, because I think of the people that dance for a profession and having, they're always doing these amazing dances, and do they still dance? I watch Twitch and Allison. I don't know if you know them, but they met on So You Think You Can Dance, and they got married, and now they have two kids. But they do on YouTube, they're always doing dances, and it's just so fun.
People keep telling me I need to get on TikTok. Because it's all about dance, you know, because it's about dancing and whatnot. But, you know, I'm like, oh, I don't think I can do another social media platform right now.
My kids who are in their upper 30s are now hooked. So
yeah, it's rising, right? Like it'll get to us eventually.
But I'm like you. I'm like, gotta learn something new. Are you kidding?
I mean, I can only handle so much.
And I, unlike you, I'm not coordinated. Again, that's a story in my head. I know. But to learn a dance takes me like three times as long as the normal person. And sometimes it's like the person, and I don't know if it's something in my chemical, my brain, but when they're backwards.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
The right, left,
the reverse. Yeah. You have to mirror. Like, we call it mirroring. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
My partner will sometimes find me. He'll catch me in the kitchen doing a ballet bar, doing pliés and tendus in the morning. I don't know why. I will do some pliés, and he's always laughing at me, you know.
I mean, ballet, that's a tough sport.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, that's part of the reason I think I went to musical theater, you know, because it is really rough. But I loved ballet. It was a daily part of my life. And just the other day, I went to the Capizio store, or online, because you can't go to the store, right? But I bought some ballet shoes, slippers, after all these years.
Wow, that's great.
And I thought, you know what, I think I might take class again.
So they make men ballet slippers. I guess they have to, because there's men ballet. You know, you always think of the pink little girl slippers.
They're black for men and white, but they make them, and they even make them. They make them adult size, so it's not just for kids. So yeah, I bought some, and I think it's time to go back to maybe a class.
Yeah. Do you have any videos of you dancing on your website?
I have some of me practicing yoga, but not dancing.
Okay.
But that's not a bad idea.
That would be good.
On my social media, I do. You know, we were in Australia on vacation last year, and I started doing PK turns
in
a park in Australia. So,
well, yeah. I knew you did it at one of our retreats. You led something on this.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Thanks so much for coming and sharing your wisdom and sharing the breath work, I think, is going to help a lot of people. So I'm appreciative, grateful for you. Thank you
so
much. All right.
Thank you.
They can find you at thenickdemos.com, right?
Yeah, thenickdemos.com, my website, which they can actually get a free breath work video.
Oh, good.
There. And at thenickdemos on Instagram and Facebook.
Okay. And we'll have that stuff in the show notes. And he goes live, he said, three times a week. So
you can get
some good nuggets. Do you interact when you do that?
Oh, yes,
I do. Ask questions and stuff?
Absolutely.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Living Your Spark Second Half podcast. If you'd like to watch my guest interviews, you can find the video version of this podcast on my Not Your Average Grandma YouTube channel. Also, you can check out what I have going on at the moment by going to my website at notyouraveragegrandma.com. Or find me on Instagram or Facebook at Not Your Average Grandma. If you like this episode, please mention it to a friend, and don't forget to leave a review so I know the topics you like best and can bring you more of that content in upcoming episodes. Last but not least, remember to always listen to that inner voice that will never steer you wrong and make living from the most sparked place possible your biggest priority. When we do that, we make the world a better place.